Ladies and gentlemen, we are having a joint parliamentary committee on agriculture and land, on rural development and land, and also on agriculture, forestry and fisheries. This being our very first meeting after a very short one that only met just the last 8 chapters. It's become very clear that we are hitting the road running. I take it that you have to speak standing. The complaint was that we cannot see each other. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a joint committee on rural development and land, and also on agriculture, forest and fishing. My name is Lulu Johnson. This being our first meeting, I take it that it is imperative that we get to introduce ourselves to the chair, and I doubt very much that they will extend that to all of us. And the one way of getting to know each other, perhaps as and when we speak, we shall be expected to tell as to who we are, and which part we're coming from, so that we really get to familiarize ourselves, or each other to ourselves. Welcome, Minister and Deputy Minister for Rural Development, and Minister Mkwinti, and Minister and Deputy Minister Parker, and also Deputy Minister Mulder. Welcome. We did get an apology from the Minister, Sumar Peterson, that she couldn't make it as she has an engagement with the President this morning in preparation for the World Economic Forum. Apologies were taken. We are gathered to do only one thing, to receive a briefing from both the Department of Agriculture and also the Department of Land Affairs. The reason why we are doing it in that fashion, we should all be knowing by now that our budgets that we have are still based on the old budget of 2009 to 2010. 2010, which will then mean that as we hear in the news that only around October when the adjustments are being made, that a realignment shall then follow suit. But for now, until then, we are still on our old budget, which will then mean from time to time we will find ourselves having to engage in such joint effort as and when we move forward with our budget. in our activities as a committee. And also precisely because most of these programs, in this school specifically on agriculture and land, they do overlap from time to time. I think those few words, myself here and also the co-chairperson, perhaps I would imagine he would wish to get you to hear his voice as well as he is about to greet you, so that we get to know as to who he is as well as a co-chair.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Our purpose for today is to prepare ourselves for the 17th of June, when we will be debating agriculture and land, vote 23 and vote 27. I'm assuming, because my co-chair has introduced me as Stone Cesarani, the chair of agriculture and land, you have all the documentation before you or in front of you that we will be using today. The two DGs will be presenting. We have agreed in the order that agriculture will start and land will follow. And the DG of agriculture, Ms. Nduli, Njabulo Nduli, is here. She will take the podium and make the presentation. The purpose of today is to make sure that we are all ready for the debate on the 17th of June, and that we will have all the necessary tools of trade to enable us to participate in that debate. Ms. Nduli.
Honorable chairpersons of the joint session on vote 23 and 27, honorable ministers and deputy ministers present, honorable members, I thank you for this opportunity to present vote 23, the strategic plan for the Department of Agriculture. Before doing so, honorable members, allow me to introduce some members of our state-owned enterprises who are here with us. They will not be able to speak to you this morning, but I'd like to acknowledge their presence. In the midst, we have the President and CEO of the ARC, the Agricultural Research Council, Dr. Shedrack Maipudi. We also have the General Manager of the Honours Report Biological Products, Dr. Andre Jassy. We also have the CEO of the National Agricultural and Marketing Council, Mr. Ronald Ramabulani. Also present here is the CEO of the Perishable Products Export Control Council, Mr. Mabombo. I would also like to acknowledge the presence of the DDG responsible for forestry, who has also come to join us in the meeting. The other members will introduce themselves as they also respond to the presentation. The documents, honorable members, have already been circulated, and I'd like to go quickly through to the presentation where we will do a bit of overview, our mandate, talking more about the branches themselves, where the DDG will make the presentation.
Excuse me, Mr. We have 1.5 hours for the presentation and debate, because we have 1.5 hours for land. So I would want you to make sure that you bring the highlights, because the members would have a copy to look at. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I will then present the whole document instead of asking the other DDGs to respond. I'm on page one of the presentation. Honorable members, here we are linking our strategic plan to the medium-term strategic framework, and therefore the goals that have been outlined through the new administration are summarized just for us to note and also to indicate that out of the 72 deliverables and policy doables, the department analyzed and identified 42 out of the 72 issues from the manifesto and from the framework that have strategically relevant and supportive of the agricultural programs. And therefore, for the next 5 years, based on the 10 points from the strategic framework, our mandate will seek to fulfill the creation of decent work and sustainable livelihood through enhanced food security programs, a contribution to the comprehensive rural development program. In doing so, we have organized the program, the department, into 5 programs. The first one is the production and resources management program, followed by the agricultural support services. The third is the area that is due on trade and economic development. And the fourth is for the work on food safety and biosecurity. And of course, the financial officer who deals with the vote 23 in terms of the budget. Moving on to the next page, we'd like to share with the committee some of the key principles that will uphold our program and ensure that there is effective service delivery. These key principles relate to our focus on specific areas with specific emphasis on farm dealers, their corridors, and their following the commodity approach. We have committed ourselves to align our comprehensive support, including social support from especially from the social cluster. We are committed to cooperative governance, where we ensure that the joint planning, budgeting, and approval of implementation of projects. We realize that we cannot achieve our programs without the partnership for delivery. We also strongly believe on the subsidiary approach, including the decentralized decision and implementation up to the lowest practical level. In so doing, we are convinced that the successes of the BITOP individual settlement project will be the measure of success of our efforts. Honourable members, the next slide talks to our legislative mandate of the department. Without going through the whole list of the legislation that we administer, both in terms of development of norms and standards, in terms of inspections, in terms of monitoring, but all these pieces of legislation is work that is mostly done behind the scenes. We sometimes only get to the public domain when maybe there are critical issues that are in the public debate. And in this particular instance, for example, when we deal with the GMO Act, that has made us into contact mostly with the public. But all in all, these are the public policies and the legislative mandate that the department has. And we'll be talking to some of those legislations that will be tabled before this House during this financial year. I will now go directly to the programs themselves, starting with the first program, which is production and resources management. This is a program that implements our food security programs and the support to the, especially working with the social and community cluster, and put emphasis on lessening our dependency on imports, ensuring that household food security, and that there is affordable food at the household level, and therefore look into the expansion of some of programs to ensure access to production teams, and ensuring these food relief programs to the poorest. In this case, as I said, we're working very closely with the Department of Social Development, and some of the priorities for budget 09-10 will include the rolling out of the livestock multiplication program, the rollout of the food production program through the Ilimajisima campaign, and also the implementation of the integrated household program in response to the high food prices, but also with a stronger collaboration with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform in implementing some of the programs, including the fencing program. Moving on some of the highlights for the year, this will also include the land use planning and land care program, the comprehensive agricultural support, including the mechanization production inputs, and the investment in the agricultural infrastructure, including irrigation access to roads, warehouses, and fencing, as I said, done in partnership with the Department of Rural Development and Land, and also implementing 4 of our commodity strategies, that is the grain, the livestock, the food, and the cotton. The next program, honorable members, is the agricultural support services. And I would like to spend a little bit more time on this problem, because this is the one that interfaces between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Rural Development and the provinces, and where the implementation is done through the three spheres of government. This program develops and facilitates the implementation of appropriate policies, targeted programs that are aimed at promoting access to the agricultural sector to promote shared growth and commercial viability. These programs include our livelihood development support programs and some of our products the members have been familiar with, including the CARS, MAFISA, the AgriBEE, and some of the agricultural disaster management products. There's also a section that deals with agricultural research, with direct support in agricultural education, training, and extension, and as well as the advisory services in support of the targeted groups. The ARC allocation, honorable members, and the transfers is managed from this particular program. Just a few highlights on what this division has done over the last year, and these include the extension recovery program, which has been financed through the MTF of 2008-2011 with a tune of 500 million rand. And for this particular year, we spent 100 million was dispersed in provinces in 2008-09, and by the end of 2009, 81.6 million was spent by provinces. And we had set a target of training 334 extension personnel, and we managed to reach 348. We also had set a target of provide short courses and targeting training to 1,000 extension officers, and through our means we were able to reach over 1,200. Three of the nine provinces, that is Switzerland, KZN and Northwest, have procured the decision support system committee known as the extension online to enhance our support and improve our information dissemination. Moving on some of the highlights about the establishment of the partnerships we have with the commodity groups. But please announce that during this period, 37 agreements were signed with 11 commodity organizations. Totally, we had about 527 projects were reached out throughout the country. Honorable members, we are also dealing with the AgriBEE fund and the MAFISA, and we just want to indicate that in terms of progress, we have established the BEE council, and there's a lot of work that we'll be focusing on moving on in this financial year, and also with the establishment of 10 institutions appointed to handle MAFISA, where also we have had to kickstart some of the ILIMA DISIMA campaign for 2008 through the use of the MAFISA funds, that we will be elaborating further, as we say, the way forward on how to address these two particular issues. In terms of agricultural research, this is an important key area in our development. We've concluded the agricultural research and development strategy and the research agenda, priority research, which will focus both in the short, medium, and term, and is currently under discussion with stakeholders within the national research system. In terms of some of the programs that we have had, over the year, we also distributed 146 million that was channeled via the land bank to the 10 accredited financial intermediaries of MAFISA, where a minimum of 200 projects is targeted for this financial year. I have talked much more to the AgriBEE charter. That said, that the current fund is established at 48.6 million and will be made available during this financial year to some of the projects. Some of the targeted interventions will relate to training and the research and extension support program through the distribution of 117 million to the provinces, supply farmers with the extension green book, and also extend on the implementation of the flood management disaster program. Focusing much more onto this financial year, we'll be set on start developing the development of the one-stop shop to consolidate the funding structure and increase our access to land, financial services, and entrepreneurial support. One of the key areas of this is the remodeling, financing and funding to create this facility, the national funding facility, to stimulate the sector. This facility will further restructure the debt of emerging farmers and also enhance shareholding of commercial farmers and enterprises of emerging farmers to ensure market access. And we do hope that through this facility, we'll begin to address some of the challenges that we had currently in terms of ensuring the support to emerging farmers. Honourable members, I'll now move to the next session, which deals with the trade and economic development. This is the work that is due mostly with the Department of Trade and Industry, honourable members, and the two units are directly responsible for the economic and statistical services, as well as trade and marketing development. It is in this unit that the National Agricultural Marketing Council, the NAMC, is housed. Going through to some of the highlights for the year, we developed an agricultural tariff policy framework and trained more than 300 farmers in commodity-based agricultural marketing. We concluded the review of the agricultural marketing environment as a precursor to the review of the Agricultural Marketing Product Act 47 of 1996. And part of the work that is doing, participated in various trade negotiations representing South Africa, agricultural trade interests, and some of those negotiations are also on the start to EPA negotiations, and they participated in, also in the monitoring of the SACU-MECASOL preferential trade agreement. Our forecast for 2009-2010 will be the finalization of the amendments of the Marketing Agricultural Products Act, and also finalize the marketing policy and strategy, and also finalize the business plans and establishment of the fresh produce coalition infrastructure in the provinces, working together with the cluster that works on the infrastructure. And we continue our participation in the WTO Doha round of multilateral negotiations, and also on the SADC EC-EPA negotiations, and also the implementation of the SADC trade protocol and the SACU-MECASOL PTA. And we continue focusing on some of those strategic relationships, including the SACU-India trade negotiations. The final program, honourable members, to present is a unit that deals with the risk management associated with diseases, plants, pests, genetically modified organisms, registration of products, and the agricultural food and the provision of food safety to safeguard our human life of South Africans. And this program has two major sub-programs, one focusing on plant health and inspection services, which focuses on sound plant health risk management frameworks, contributes to a compliance system for assessing potential risks associated with GMOs and regulated of border and national inspection services or regulated agricultural products intended for import and export and also for local trade. The second section deals with the food and veterinary services and manages the animal and animal diseases and assists with the negotiating protocols for importing and exporting of our animal and animal products, and also ensures that animal products are of good quality and safe for human consumption. Briefly on some of the highlights for this past year, we managed to control the classical swine fever successfully, also managed to maintain exports, especially for the ostrich meat and game, successfully concluded the protocol for cooperating the provinces on the delivery of veterinary services, and managed the exports for fruit and vegetables, of which the citrus and deciduous fruit amounts to 20 billion, and this is done in collaboration with one of our SOEs, the PPECB. We have increased our inspection services at the borders, and expanded on our dog program, inspection programs at the international airport, and the program has experienced some of these challenges with the surge in trade and increased movement of people, and this has therefore resulted in us strengthening our biosecurity risk. And recently we've been seeing outbreaks of both plant and animal diseases, and this has really been also due to the impact of climate change, which has had a serious impact on the outbreak of diseases. Without going through much on the highlights for 2009-2010, we just want to highlight that there will be, beginning in September, a rabies campaign that will be conducted nationally. We'll also be creating awareness on the workshops on the GMOs, and we're facilitating some of the schemes that we have, especially on some of the diseases, including TB and rabies. Food safety, honorable members, has become a critical issue for intervention as we work closely with the Department of Health, and we'll be finalizing our food strategy and also conducting the national service that I've been talking through. Some of the challenges or some of the work that we'll be going through is the national exotic food fly survey, and also the several insect techniques that begins to impact on our trade, especially on the fruit and the horticulture industry. But concluding on this part, on the particular section, we have some major programs to ensure that we're able to maintain our the trade and with our trading partners. And also some of the residue monitoring programs for orchard and game farming will be conducted. We'll be reviewing some of the legislation that I've talked to, especially the Agricultural Pest Act. We'll also be reviewing the PPECB Act, the Animal Policy and Policy on Liquor Products, and also participating internationally on the standard setting bodies. Honourable members, moving to the vote itself on budget for the Department of Agriculture for 2009 and 2010, I'd just like to go to the bottom figure of the 2792759 and then quickly bring to your attention, especially the MTF allocation of the land care program and the CAS, which are the division of revenue transfers to the provinces, both through Schedule 5 and Schedule 4 in terms of the Act. The rest of the presentation, in terms of the summary of the program, that is in terms of the percentages, either of increase or decrease, that has been contributed per program. On the administration, we have an increase from the previous budget, an increase of 9.1, on the production and resources management of 15.8, on the agricultural support services of 9.7, on the trade and agricultural development of 12.2, and on the food safety and biosecurity program of 8.8. Further, a summary on this classification on the compensation of employees, the goods and services, the transfers and subsidies, and the payment of capital assets, would also just like to bring to our attention that there's been a decrease in this budget, specifically with goods and services, with the cost-saving measure that the department has gone through with a net allocation of 2.6, and the payment for capital assets at 15.6. The final graph is really a pictorial presentation of the trend in terms of the budget since 2004, and the indication where there's a slight increase in terms of the that allocation. And I know, I'm sorry that the pictures are in black and white, so some of the color schemes will not be clearly identified, but the slide presents the differences in allocation, both in terms of the problems that is spoken to, and I think with a great emphasis on the 60%, which relates to the transfers and the subsidies. In concluding, honorable members, moving forward, in this administration, service delivery will be enhanced by the newly configured department, which is expanded mandate, which includes the forestry, the fisheries, and the Directorate of Mariculture from the DG. We'll intensify emergency support for the vulnerable groups through your food parcels and further implementation of the IDIMA DITIMA campaign. We will work towards minimizing the imports to stimulate agricultural production in addition to classified quality of imports. The implementation of the industrial action plan through the lead sectors, for example, through forest agriculture and forestry, will be our main focus as we move forward. And we also look into the mechanisms of bringing up the processing closer to the production and fast track the implementation of the expanded public works program. Earlier on, I did indicate, honorable members, that there will be greater focus in terms of the key areas of remodeling our financing, especially through the AGRI-BEE and the MAFISA funds. And this funding will create a facility, the national funding facility, to stimulate the growth in the sector. This facility, as earlier stressed, will further restructure the debt of emerging farmers, It will also enhance shareholding of commercial farms in the enterprise of nursing farmers to ensure market access. And this facility will support integrated agriculture, forestry, and the fisheries program that will be launched as we present our revised program in August this year. And therefore, in summary, some of the key programs that will be rolled over will be indeed to ensure this comprehensive rural development strategy linked to the land and agrarian reform and food security. We are working closely with the Department of Rural Development in implementing the GIANIS project, the pilot project. We will be working very closely to ensure that there is a training and skills development initiative to strive to support the requirements of the economy. And then, of course, that they're working up closer with our border control agencies to improve the security and the cruise and the establishment of our work along the borders. And finally, in terms of some of the issues moving forward, I'd also just like to use this opportunity to explain to the honorable members of the work that we're dealing with, together with the Department of Public Service, the Presidency, and National Treasury, on the micro organization that we are part of the steering committee that will look into how the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries will be coordinated as we move forward, especially during our August program. And this will result in the aligned program of the three departments that will talk to, especially to your livestock and to your setting of rural livelihoods for private local economic development. On that note, Honorable Chairperson, I've already introduced the CEO and our state enterprises who are here with us and we really want to underscore the work that is doing in supporting the national mandate. And on that note, I'd like to thank you for this giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, DG. Deputy Minister, that is your team. So you don't want to take any further emphasis? Okay. Members, and this becomes the end of a presentation from the Department of Agriculture. At this point, I shall then take points that need clarity. And then we'll arrive at questions later on. Just for clarity for now. I'm aware that the line can be very thin. To an extent, some of us might even wish to go straight. If any clarity areas that can be sought, in the absence of any, then we should say to questions. It seems as if the TG. We hear you on. As I said, if we could just introduce each other as we speak, the party you're from, so that we get to know each other. Thank you, sir.
Can we ask questions now? Come back here. Okay. Thank you. My name is Ibrahim Simon, and he's MP. I've got more questions, but only I'm going to ask two questions. The first one, as you all know, about 6 years ago, the Maputo Declaration, where the African state signed, they committed themselves to at least have their 10% of their natural budget be allocated to agriculture. Now, presently, our budget is less than 1% of the natural budget, 1%. So I would like to know from the department what extraordinary efforts and measures has the department embarked on to convince the National Treasury to move to that 10% for agriculture. Because as we all know, our country's food security and even the poverty alleviation program is of utmost importance. That's the first question. The second one, if we look to the present budget, we'll see that consultants There's been a big increase as from 2 million in the previous years to presently more or less 46 million rand allocated to going to be spent on consultants. We would like to know from the department why was this necessary to spend a lot of money. Do we not have the skills? What is the reason behind the extensive use of consultants instead of capacitating our own people working in the department? I thank you.
Mrs. Pham, did you raise your hand? And, sorry, Mr. Swate, just your name and...
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mpoene Swate. I'm from the Democratic Alliance. I'm serving in the Rural Development and Land Reform. Mine is just actually to ask with regard to the post-settlement that the department is indicating that it wants to support and facilitate that the provision of post-settlement support. But it is now in the media that though so many people who received their farms, actually those who claimed land, they are actually worried that they don't get support after having those farms. So I just want maybe the department to exactly to tell us what support are they giving to those people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Shalom Abram is the name. Chair, firstly, I would like to know from the department whether in the Highveld area of the Mpumalanga province, as a result of extensive mining activity, agricultural production has taken a plunge. If it has, what is the department doing in terms of interventions? Secondly, Chair, whether the department has made any studies, I understand at some stage there were, regarding land which could be brought into production through irrigation in certain parts of our country, particularly the eastern part of the country, which is blessed with more water, where the water table is reasonably good. And if so, whether she can give us details on the findings of the department, the hectareage that could be irrigated, and of course, it doesn't come cheap, it will require the construction of dams in order to harness and store water, canals and everything else that goes with it, and what sort of impact would such a bold project have on rural development and alleviating poverty in those particular areas. Finally, Chair, with regard to funding, which is a major problem in agriculture, and especially funding which doesn't come cheap, we have the land bank, and it's a pity that the Department of Agriculture has lost control of the bank. It's now in the hands of Treasury. What sort of alignment has the department got with the land bank to assist our people? And the other forms of funding, you have the Mafisa funding model. I note in the presentation that its accessibility will be via various other agencies. What sort of arrangements has the department got with those agencies? Whether the people will be able to access funding reasonably easily and in a thrifty way, or is it again a question of a great deal of bureaucratic red tape which will make accessibility to the funding difficult? And in what way is CASP being implemented? Because again, one notices that scarce funding is not optimally reaching the people that it should. What is the department doing to see that there is a change and to see to it that no funds meant to assist people through CASP and any other models goes back to Treasury not utilized at the end of the financial year? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Larry Bosman from the Democratic Alliance. I've got a couple of questions. I think some of them have been asked already, but I would like to maybe start with the one on increased access to state land, financial services and entrepreneurial support. It's given here that 146 million will be channeled through the land bank to 10 accredited financial intermediaries. Now, my question is, firstly, state land, what is the amount of state land that is still available and not been distributed, and what are the circumstances going to be to get through to the available money that is available? How is it going to be distributed and on what grounds? Second question, sir, is on the AgriB Charter. We know that the council has been constituted but has not yet had a meeting. And we also see that there is a fund made available of about 48.6 million. What is the criteria for the use of this fund and how is it going to be administered, I would like to know. Another question is on the comprehensive disaster risk management system. So this disaster plan has been outstanding for a long time, and we are still waiting from the department, and I would like very much like to know when is a Disaster Risk Management Act going to be put into place. The one-stop shop financial questions has been asked. Another issue that is outstanding is on the agricultural tariff policy. We know that there has been work done on a framework. It is also an issue that, that really impacts negatively on the agricultural sector. The, my question is, how long is it going to take for this agricultural tariff policy to be implemented and put into place, as well as the Marketing of Agricultural Products Act? And then, sir, I think, the last one is on food and veterinary services. Sir, we in South Africa has a problem as far as the control of diseases are concerned. We are not really accredited for a lot of products to be exported because of maybe lack of implementation of strategies, one of which is for meat and meat products on traceability. My question is government looking at traceability issues and when is it going to be put into place? And then there has also been locally a bee infection. And I would like to know, is that under control and what mechanisms of control have been put in place? Thank you, sir.
Maybe we should agree, members, that one of the rules that we must apply moving forward, we should have only two questions per member. You have set a precedent and a half from the bottom that everybody is not going to follow you, unfortunately. And also, DG, you also allow us to take a round of questions. Thus far, we've already taken four. I think that should suffice. And again, also, we don't want to bombard you with a whole lot of questions, but we shall find it difficult to respond to. Of course, you have a team. We welcome you, Minister Jumaat Peterson. We are privileged to have had all ministers and deputy ministers from both, you know, departments. We consider ourselves, we did submit your apologies that in fact we were not even anticipating you here, but we are privileged to be here. Okay, those are the type of questions
minister and deputy minister and the department, questions have been asked to your department. You are at liberty to decide who responds to what question. First question came from Suleiman, the other one came from Swate, the other one came from Abram, and the last one came from Postmaster. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. I would request my team to respond to some of the questions that have been cleared. But if I could talk much more on the first one on the Maputo declaration, that indeed there is ongoing work with National Treasury to review the budget of agriculture strategies in line with the Maputo declaration. Currently, we are almost at about 4% of that amount, and the target is to reach the 10%. I'll then request Dr. Mukhajana to respond on the CFO to respond on the question that deals with the consultants in that budget.
Chairperson, thank you. This is a detailed question on classification, and I will respond in writing.
I did not hear you at all.
Sorry, Chairperson, I'm saying it's a detailed question on the classification of the budget, and I will respond in writing back to the committee on that specific question on the consultants.
Why do you respond in question in writing?
I haven't got the detail of the classifications with me, and I don't want to just answer the questions. I will respond in writing on exactly how the classification was made up.
Are you okay with that? We're fine. The question also, because the question is also asked not for the member specifically, I would imagine, because everybody here has an interest in that question. I think that is an approach. You want to have a say on that?
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this is an open meeting, and I think some of us are new in this committee, and some of us are new members. And this is a portfolio committee, and we as members have an oversight role to play as parliamentarians. And I think if you, the gentleman was saying this question by writing to the member, and I think you must send it to the whole portfolio committee so that we can also get it. Yeah. But I don't know what will happen again in the future that we just stay in and ask questions here in the South. We will get them on writing. Thank you very much.
I take it that question, or rather the response that comes, all members shall have access to that response. Is that fine? Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Thank you. Gigi?
I will continue to address a few other questions that are related to cards and the post settlement support by just highlighting a few figures and information. That CARS was funded to the tune of 2.5 billion over the MTF period of 2008 to 2011. During this last financial year, a total of 534 million, including the extension recovery program, was dispersed to the provinces. Out of the 1016 projects targeted for the support in 2009, 703 projects were completed at the end of this financial year. We are still having some few challenges with other provinces, especially KZN, Eastern Cape, and Northwest, who could not do well but, in some of the projects. But our figures over the time do indicate that there's been a slight improvement in terms of the expenditure over the time from 2004, when the performance was at 62%, to 2006, when it rose to 84%, and to 2008, that went on to about 91%. But the challenges that the honorable members indicated around the implementation of CARS are still there, and I think this is what will be, as we're moving forward, we have to finalize both in terms of the CARS funding mechanism, which is from our own analysis and said that the probability is too rigid. It looks into a 1 year and is based on pre-approved business plans is that the business plans were focusing on long, they're not focusing on the long-term sustainability. And then also in terms of the procurement, that is in one of the delaying sectors, and also that it is limited in terms of its cover, that it doesn't cover all the different requirements, including it only focuses on the infrastructure without the other supporting mechanisms. And therefore we welcome this discussion on the review of some of this, of this comprehensive support program that is inadequate to concern, to support the post-settlement support. There is work that is ongoing with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform in terms of identifying those projects, projects that need to be rehabilitated over time. On the specific question on Mpumalanga, I'll request one of the DDGs, Mr. Holt, to respond specifically to that question.
Thank you, CG. Currently, we've been engaged with Grain South Africa and also the Mpumalanga Department of Agriculture to do an assessment of the number of hectares that are going to lose due to mining that is taking place. The estimation is between 15% and 30% we could of high potential and lose. So as a strategy to move forward, what we have done, we've looked at areas which are high potential where we could move our production for maize. I think the area that has been identified is the area around the Sigisigi, where we feel that we could be in a position to replace the loss that could take place due to what is happening around Mpumalanga. And then regarding the issues of irrigation, we have estimated about 500,000 hectares of irrigation that needs to be rehabilitated. All that work is done through the provinces, which are important, which are critical in doing that kind of work. But what's coming out of this, most of the irrigation, especially in the former homeland, are the conflict issues which are making it difficult to revive the scheme. So we need to find a solution on how we could get the people in those irrigation schemes to understand the need of reviving the irrigation scheme so that we can be in a position to bring economy in those areas. There are discussions that are taking place through the committees that have been set up in all the provinces for how we could best revive the irrigation scheme. I think in Pumala, in Limpopo, it's working well. There are quite a number of schemes that have, so I cannot give the exact case that has been rehabilitated, but Mpumalanga has got a clearly defined river transition of irrigation scheme plan. Thank you.
On the land bank, honorable members, indeed, there is a transition that has taken place where the Land Bank Act is now under administered by National Treasury. Specifically, what we have done between myself, the DG of Rural Development, and the CEO of the Land Bank is to establish quarterly meetings to address some of the challenges that might be faced, especially in terms of the provincial implementation level. However, I must already upfront say there is no legal provision that allows this gentleman's agreement, and therefore I think as we review this piece of legislation, maybe we should look into possibilities of ensuring that there is better accountability and reporting mechanisms between the departments of with the implementation departments. But I must say that currently with these quarterly meetings we've been able to share our programs at the operational level, but would welcome a possibility of institutionalizing this relationship that is not just left at the operational level. I will stop the chair and I think we've exhausted the question.
I think there was a question on the tariff policy. I'm not sure whether that was responded to. And also on agri-BEE criteria for funding. And the availability also of state land for agriculture. I think those questions were not responded to.
Yes. I agree with you, sir. I think none of my questions have been answered.
I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I will invite the FEDDG for traditional states, Mr. Morokolo, to respond both on the BEE and also on the tariff policy.
Thank you, DG and the honorable members, Chair. Regarding the tariff policy, yes, indeed, the tariff policy was concluded. And we have entered an agreement with the Department of Trade and Industry as a custodian department for the administration of matters pertaining to tariffs to incorporate the principles that we have formulated as a department to try to get to a position where agriculture, its specific characteristics and the nature in terms of its contributions to rural development, socio-economic development, food security. Those principles, very specific to the sector, must be incorporated into the National Industrial Policy Framework that the DTI is in the process of finalizing. So we have the two DGs have signed an MOU in terms of how this process is going to be implemented. Now we are at a process where all the principles that we have developed within the tariff policy framework will be incorporated into the National Industrial Policy Framework so that we don't have a proliferation of, policies all over the place. Regarding the second part of the implementation of the tariff policy, we have also agreed with the International Trade Administration Commission to also incorporate specific, conditions or variables that must be taken into consideration when the tariff applications for agricultural products are considered. So in that respect, I think Honorable Member Bosman, the matter is now at a level where we have to conclude with the DTI. So the department is concluded. Coming to the second issue on the marketing of agricultural products, also the process has been concluded. The draft act is in place, and it's just minor refinements that we need to conclude on the act. And hopefully by the end of this the calendar year, the act will be, tabled within the department as well as to the minister for conclusion. And I think it will be ready next year for parliamentary processes. But for now, I think more than 90% of the exercise has been concluded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to invite Mr. Mankazana to speak on the Agriculture Disaster Management Act and the program.
Thank you, sir. On the disaster management, what I would like to emphasize mainly is that we have taken different aspects on disaster, one being the drought management, which we have concluded with stakeholders, and we have now made a submission to the minister that should be gazetted. And then on the other area that we are looking at around flood management, which is work that we are going to be doing in this current financial year, as we indicated in terms of our plan. So the approach that we have been taking has been that we need to have a focus on specific areas because of the nature of the work that we have to do. So, Chair, I think that's what I can specifically say, that we are taking a step-by-step approach in addressing the specific areas on disaster.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I would like to invite Dr. Mukhajan to make a statement on the food and veterinary services.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question was around the diseases which are occurring in the country. I just want to mention that
recently, it's indeed true that we have seen outbreaks of diseases which never occurred in South Africa. But there are quite a number of contributory factors, because the movement of people, the movement of goods, and also the movement of insects, some of them also bring along diseases into the country. So that is why within the program we have intensified the border control and also the meat inspection also at the border, particularly at the harbor. We also have also picked up the issue around the meat which has been coming into the country, where we had people who were dodging the SARS taxation and bringing in meat which was not of a proper quality. So we are working together with the police, and we recently pounded quite a number of consignments in the Durban Harbour. It happened 2 weeks ago, and we are working on that. But the challenge of animal diseases, what I'm saying, and together with the plant diseases, like recently we have seen that we've got the outbreak of American fowl rot, where we suspect it could be due to the fact that the disease itself might have been occurring in the country for some time, because it's a bacterial disease which forms spores and can remain in the ground for quite a long period of time. So the impact of climate change is on us, and that's why now we are working on the resuscitation of preventive measures like vaccination program for animals, and also conducting surveillance, which we have reported in the report. Thank you. Chairperson, the next question, allow me to request the DG of Rural Development to respond on the state land.
Thank you, Chairperson. On state land, when we talk about 87% of land, which is agricultural land in the hands of the white landowners, and then 13% is state land that is in the hands of black people. We are referring to that 13%, which is the state land in the communal areas. We also have state land under various state departments, such as some farms under agriculture, some state land under the defense, health, education, and then we have state land that is under public works and the Department of Land Affairs. We have looked at all of that state land. Most of the state land is not is encumbered in that there are communities staying on that land, these various communities in the ex-homeland areas. We have made an analysis. We did have a state land audit, and we established that only 2 million hectares can be redistributed to meet the land reform needs. Of that state land, most of it is the farms that were in the South African Development Trust. Most of that land, about 50% of it, we have already passed on to the land reform beneficiaries. We are left with about 1 million hectares of those, which we still have to take through the state land disposal process. But that 2 million hectares is only a fraction of the 24.6 million hectares that has to contribute to land redistribution. So we still have about 19 million hectares that we have to redistribute to meet the 30% target. So on state land, it's only 1 million. Thank you, Chairman.
I take it that there are a few follow-up questions. However, we shall be targeting the hands that have not as yet spoken for now. Sir, and sir, and madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Only three questions. The one is about the research units for agriculture. Sorry, my name is Johan Gelderblom. I'm from the ANC. The first question is about the research units. I think the competitive times we are living in, it is only the quality of our products that will sell. Therefore, I'm a little bit concerned about the provision form of money in that units. And I also would like to know how many of our research units are still effective. And the second question is about the training of our emerging farmers. Also, with the quality and of the training of, I think it's actually CETA, the CETA, the AgriCETA. I am a little bit concerned about that because I read last year that there's still not a lot of money, there are 20 million rand that was spent. Now my question is that, is there a kind of monitoring about the training programs and what is the progress we make with the quality of training on our emerging farmers? The other thing is about the veterinary services in Onderstepoort. What is the situation now there? Is there improvement? Are the department making progress there with the situation in Onderstepoort? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sibusiso Khatebe. My question relates to the follow-up from that one in relation to the Mpumalanga situation in relation to the agricultural area. That issue of that thing in the area of Woodbank, it's the Kangala region, that, it's affected by the mining area. But we've just noticed the development of the issue of the mining rights to the area of Kersbank. One should also check to say, what is the department doing in order to intervene? Because if you can just take notice, the area of Kersbank, that's where you find the mili-mili and beans most growing. And it's one of the areas where it was targeted for the issue of the biofuel. One should also check what is the specific intervention, because we cannot just browse over. We must know the specific intervention and specific target in ensuring that that thing doesn't also blow up to the whole areas where we find that the issue of agricultural areas within those areas are much reduced. Because as we have taken notice, young people are starting to get interested in terms of the agriculture and want to also venture into that area. We must be able to also detect that we cannot find ourselves having those challenges. And the other issue is that if you check, there are these other areas that are also having many disputes in terms of the issue of land. One of the issues that was on the media, national media, issue of partner, where people were fighting with that white guy that's like checking the disputes because between the people around that area and also the white farm owner that has also wanted to put a gate farm in that area. Last question, Chair, I wanted to check in terms of what is the process of management of resources that are given to these emerging farmers. Because there are these tractors and other resources that are given to these people, but you may find that not every certain individual can be able to use those resources. But once you know the management of it, because we must be able to say if these resources are government, that simply means they are related to all people around those areas that can be able to use them and farm with them. But you must be able, what is the management strategy around that area? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Vatiswa Pam Mugwanya, ANC. Slightly, some of the questions have touched on my concern, but I will further amplify maybe to my satisfaction, I may get an answer. What provision is made to revitalize interest of land utilization for food production in rural areas, especially our real back of the beyond rural areas, where there's a lot of unutilized or where there's a lot of land that is lying fallow, and people are starving, but they have got so much land because of a lot of deficiencies they may have, or property or implements or tools for tilling the land, so as to assist towards food production. The second question is, maybe it escaped me. I don't know what also provision is made towards reimbursement of land that is, or property that has been destroyed, agricultural property that has been destroyed through disasters and things like that, or diseases or, whatever. But what provision, what insurance or compensation has been put in place for such people? Now, I'm not going to ask a question further than the second question, as the chairperson has specifically stated that we should not go beyond two questions. But I want to say, in terms of the irrigation, I'm augmenting on what one of the speakers has responded on. In terms of the irrigation scheme, especially the one in Homeland Transkei, the problem there is lack of social facilitation and communication with the relevant stakeholders. That is why there is a problem in that, in terms of that irrigation scheme. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Peter Turius. I'm from the DA. I just will limit it to two short questions. In the presentation under the heading Way Forward, the department refers to one of the biggest problems which farmers experience, and that is the high input costs. And the department says they will implement strategies to lower agricultural input costs and to introduce agricultural incentive schemes. I would just like to get some more clarity on exactly how do they plan to make it easier for farmers to lower the input costs. That is my first question. The second question relates to extension offices. I recall reading somewhere that there's a shortage of 5,600 extension offices across the board in agriculture in the country. And the department plans to recruit something like 150 extension officers per annum in the medium term. Now my question is that sufficient? Will we be able to reach the farms and the needs with that number of extension officers? Thank you, sir.
The co-chair here has the last bite, sorry, and then we're breaking the rule just for one.
I'm directing my question to the ministers because the DG has indicated that they have no legal recourse on the land bank. There is a serious question relating to, one, the work that is done by a land bank that is taking repossessing farms from the resettled farmers, and yet the post-settlement support is lacking on those farmers. So what the department is doing in trying to distribute land is undone by the land bank. And I don't think it is the mandate of the land bank to repossess those lands. It is to support the farmers. The second question relates to the interest rates, both of Mafisa and the land bank. The developmental approach for both land bank and Mafisa is not to compete with the commercial banks, but to support the farmers. And yet the interest rates are not supporting agricultural activity, but rather to be another bank. What's the purpose of having Mafisa and the land bank if there will be another bank.
KG and the minister?
Thank you, Chairperson. In our meetings, I introduced the CEO of the Agricultural Research Council, and I'd like to invite him to share some light on the research capacity, Dr. Mpudi.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members and ministers. I think the issue of capacity in the Agricultural Research Council is an issue that has been growing in the last 10 years. It's a problem. We've been losing capacity over the years, and largely to underinvestment into agriculture research, not just by government, but also by the private sector. That has negatively impacted on the ability to recruit new scientists and researchers, and also to retain them, regardless of the types of strategies that you have. Now, in terms of the institutes, the Agricultural Research Council is comprised of 10 institutes. They are still existing, they are still functional, and they are still delivering according to those particular commodities that they were designed to do. We've been trying to improve on internal control mechanisms to improve on the performance of the organization, but also to try and improve on incentive systems for the employees so that we can try and retain them. We have implemented a new system of a dual career path so that when somebody comes in, they don't have to wait for the manager of the institute to die before they can get promoted. They can simply get promoted on the basis of their expertise and become experts in that particular field. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mpudi. The next question was on the training within the sector, the monitoring and quality of the training, and I once again invite Ms. Mangazane to give us an update.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the training of emerging farmers, I just want to highlight two main things. One, within the Comprehensive Agriculture Support Program, there is a pillar on training and capacity building. That pillar, we put 10% that must be utilized for training. That's one thing that I want to mention. Secondly, within that 10%, one of the things that you emphasize that provinces must do, part of that money must be used for assessment of training needs. It must be followed with training plans, and there must be evaluation of the training that has been conducted. That's something that we have put in, the framework has been put in place in the last 2 years. Now, with regard to training that is funded by sector education and training authorities, the service providers that are used for training are accredited service providers. But within the CETA arrangement is that you've got a unit that is for quality assurance. But this unit is so small in terms of size that it cannot actually be sitting in the headquarters in Pretoria. And therefore, he is unable to conduct monitoring and evaluation of the quality of training. Because the CETA funding structure limits CETA that they can only use 10% of their funding for administrative purposes. So it's a policy matter that might need to be looked at. And then another thing that I want to emphasize, we started something called the commodity-based master mentorship program. We worked with about 11 commodities at the present moment. Your meat producers organization, your NERCO, your citrus growers, where they go on specific projects. Again, here we had a very limited funding to work on in terms of this exercise. What we have done recently, also following from what the discussion on the Agri Summit in Polokwane, where there were specific areas identified, to say that both the private sector and government must put together a mentorship program. Secondly, also to work together in terms of delivery of essential services. We have recently put together an 8-person task team that is working on exercise, 4 from the commodity organization and 4 from 4 provincial departments of agriculture. So that is the work that relates in as far as strengthening training in the sector. Thank you, Chairperson.
The next
question.
Let me remind each other here that we're having 2 committees. And the co-chair announced earlier on that we shall have until a certain point so that we move on to another committee. He just reminded me that we are literally left with 9 minutes. And I would also appreciate that the question related to land, that they be parked so that when the DG for land shall be presenting, those issues are also taken up at that point. That's how we should manage also that part that deals with the land. We have those 8 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. I would invite Dr. Mukhajana to talk on the OPP and what is happening around the veterinary services and support.
Thank you, DJ. I think the question was around whether the situation at the OVP has improved or not. Yes, it has improved. We have appointed a new CEO, but Dr. Justice sitting right there in the back, the situation has improved.
And in the interest of time, Chair, I will quickly go through some of the questions that relate to the work that we're doing in terms of the soil management and the rehabilitation of programs, and I'd like to remind the members of the program that we have in place, the National Land Care Program, that aims to ensure that there is a sustainable use of our natural resources. As the debate has been going on, it is indeed the same challenge that we have, that the current allocation for the land care program is only at about 48 million, and the funds that we have are not sufficient to actually see that there is visibility in terms of our implementation, but there is ongoing work, especially in the Eastern Cape, where we ensure that there is a sustainable use of the resources. The other question, Chair, in terms of who looks after the resources once the project has been completed, I think that will really still remain a big challenge. But I think as we develop the projects and build the cohesive communities to take full responsibility of their assets. We've had experiences where when you put the fence up, the following day it is gone. And really we need to reinforce to our communities, to our project beneficiaries, their responsibilities as well in looking after the assets and the property of government. And I think we cannot say more on this particular issue than to say it once as beneficiaries, we also have a responsibility especially for accountability and the maintenance of that infrastructure. And in terms of the extension and support services, indeed the program that we have in place that spoke to the extension recovery program, where extensive training is being done and in recruiting more extension officers into the program. And the targets we have really are based on the finances that we received. I did indicate that for the next MTF, the 500 million that has been allocated, when we've used 100 million for this financial year. So we've set our targets based on the current resources within the MTF, and also acknowledge that in no way is it sufficient to address the challenges that we have. But with the limited resources that we have, that is the program that we have put in place. I'd like now to hand over to the Minister to talk on some of the issues, especially the land bank, the question that has been raised today.
Thanks, the 2 chairpersons, ministers and deputy ministers. The land bank matter is quite a sensitive matter, and we have had bilaterals, myself in particular, with the Minister of Finance and the Department of Treasury to evaluate the progress we have made thus far on the land bank. The the kind of administrative stabilization has happened, and I think we are confident that with the stabilization of the administration, we can now move into the next leg of addressing the weaknesses and gaps and shortcomings within the land bank. The outstanding matter which still remains is the recapitalization of the bank. And without sufficient funding of the bank, we will not be able to address the kind of loan schemes which we have, the interest rates which should become below prime and which currently is above prime. So as you correctly said, Jefferson, there's no way in which the land bank can lend money at prime plus 5. It then just not makes it a facilitative bank. The only reason why emerging farmers then do go to the land bank is because the bank then offers money easier than a commercial bank, but not at a better rate. So the lending rates is indeed a problem for us. Another matter for policy reconsideration with the land bank is the fact that the bank expects repayment on the loan from the very first month. And even commercial farmers are not capable of repaying a loan from the very first month of when the bank has allocated the loan. We are also concerned that it takes the bank almost 2 years before it approves the project. And by then most of the projects have collapsed. I have, from a provincial point of view, tried to attempt to assist a group of 100 women to get a funding from the land bank. It's taken more than 2 years. The funding has still not been dispersed. So that was just a pilot study on my part, just to see what the complexities are and the kind of goalposts. We continue shifting the goalposts so much so that we make it virtually impossible for emerging farmers to access any type of funding, be it agri-BE funding or loans from the land bank. Thanks.
That's the last response. Then we move over to land.
Thank you, Chair. There's a question that I omitted in terms of the input, reducing the input cost. Just to say that this is really ongoing work. We're working closely with the Department of Trade and Industry within the Interministerial Committee on that is responding to the high food prices, and members will recall that we have a three-pronged strategy that we try to reduce some of those costs. The work that we're dealing with the Competition Commission, for example, the latest report that came through from Sasol and Fosco, is part of the work that we've been doing, looking into the whole value chain, the competitiveness both through its vertical and strategic integration along the value chain, and identifying those areas where costs could be reduced. In another area, we're reviewing some of our legislation, the cost of doing business. I think one of the issues, especially on H36, on the agricultural and the fertilizer, and the that is one of the problematic acts where it's been cumbersome to get approvals done and in terms of the requirements of the act. So we're looking into those particular positions to review some of the work and to speed up on delivery. One of the other the piece of work that we're doing in terms of reducing costs, working within the transport and infrastructure cluster, with the campaign that we currently have of reducing the transport costs, moving the agro-logistics strategy, moving the burden from the road back to rail as a long-term strategy on reducing those costs. But as earlier presented, we're working very closely at the border post with France, reducing the illegal imports that come through to our country that have a negative impact on how our own farmers can finally produce. But this is, as I say, it works within the cluster. Some of the deliverables will come through
from our, especially from the Department of Trade and Industry, doing the work that we are dealing on the tariffs and the work that we are dealing on with the Competition Commission. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, CG, and also Minister. I think that should bring us to the end of this part one. And then I must also mention that the legal reforms that is expected, again, also as members are going to be preparing for their debate next week, we should get that report by Thursday, so that that assists members as they prepare for the debate. And I think, should there be any other thing else, we should still have time at the tail end of the session, just before we break for lunch. I take it that we'll move over to the land. The co-chair, sorry, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairman. Maybe just as a last word, I think there was without any doubt confusion and surprise when President Zuma appointed the two of us, being from the ANC on the one side and being from the Freedom Front Plus on the other side. But I think also in that sense it sent a message that surely when it comes to these type of issues, there is a lot of common ground, a lot of patriotism, and that we surely must make it work without doubt. I know there's a lot of challenges, and I listen to what's being said here. I know it's not easy at this moment with recession and everything, but I really get a lot of positive messages that just the appointment and just the message being sent by that already created a lot of goodwill out there. People phoning me and say, I'm now going to this, I'm going to buy something new, whatever. And I hope that with this committee's help, we can really use that wave to succeed in what's planned, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
I think that note should tell us one thing, and one thing alone, that the President did make mention of the fact that we are now entering into a new gear of having to have a robust parliament, an activist parliament. So all of us are going to be expected to, if we haven't as yet changed gear, we need to soonest, you know, do that. Okay, thanks, Deputy Minister, for those kind words. Those are words that basically say we all have a responsibility as countrymen and women, having to be patriotic as we move forward. That should then take us to the land, DG and the co-chair taking over. Thank you.
DG, you have got 30 minutes. You can take less, but you can't take more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chapata.
Excuse me, before you do that, I work on a different mode. Is the Minister and Deputy Minister interested in making preliminary remarks before the presentation? Thank you. DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Our focus in this presentation is the strategic plan. That is the document that has been circulated when we came in here, which is based on the ENE, which is this vote 27 document that has been circulated. We are also guided by the medium-term strategic framework, as well as the key priorities that have been given to all of us as we get into government. Now, the programs that are covered in the strategic plan include the administration in the Department of Land Affairs, which is now the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. That's the new name. The other program deals with surveying and mapping, which is producing maps and conducting surveys which relates to land administration, and the cadastral surveys component, the restitution program which deals with land claims, the land and tenure reform program which deals with redistribution program to address the 87-13% land ownership in the country, and then the spatial planning which deals with the issues of addressing the spatial planning in the country, who is staying where, what development happens where, as well as the auxiliary and associated services, including the deed registration function. Under the medium-term strategic framework, we have 10 priorities that have been decided upon by government, the new administration. One of them is speeding up growth, transformation, economy, creating decent work and sustainable livelihoods. In the manner in which we implement the land reform programs and the rural development programs, we've got to take these priorities into account. In terms of this list of priorities, we are strategic priority number 3 in that list of priorities. And what that priority covers is the comprehensive rural development strategy, which is linked to land and agrarian reform, seeking to ensure food security for all. Cabinet has decided to form clusters which are going to work on a plan of action covering all of these strategic priorities. Ours is to ensure the aggressive implementation of land reform policies, stimulate agricultural production with a view of contributing to food production as we implement land reform, and ensuring rural livelihoods, food security, improved delivery to ensure quality of life, revitalization of rural towns, and skills development as we implement a comprehensive rural development program, and explore and support non-farm economic activities, institutional capacity, and cooperative development. That's what that strategic priority number 3 has to cover. In reviewing all of this, we have come up with these priorities for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. The integrated rural development that produces improved quantitative and qualitative results through land and agrarian reform. Not just focusing on the number of hectares delivered, but focusing on what is the impact of those land reform programs on the quality of life of the people that are land reform beneficiaries. Ensuring land delivered through land reform contributes to food security, protect the rights of farm workers and farm dwellers, empowering vulnerable groups within the land and agrarian sector, particularly rural women and youth. Providing comprehensive settlement and implementation support to land reform beneficiaries by working closely with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And then partnerships with commercial agriculture to promote agri-BE for increased employment and for increased agricultural production. Achieving equity, redress, social justice, sustainable socio-economic development, and ensuring that adequate resources are available for rural development, land and agrarian change at the household level, and integrating land rights and water rights into a common program to support the comprehensive rural development program. Reflecting on the land and tenure reform, we have redistributed 5 million hectares of the target that we must redistribute, which is 24.6 million hectares, which makes 30% of agricultural land by 2014. Clearly, this has been a very slow progress, and there have been challenges that the department is dealing with in that area, at the end of this this presentation, I will indicate what are the key challenges around the implementation of land reform. We have come up with some of the products for land reform, your LRAD and other instruments, and PLAS is one of those programs which says that we must enable people to buy, enable governments to buy land with movable assets, precisely to address the issue of sustainable land reform, which says that the land that we buy is not just going to be the fixed asset, which is the land, but also those things that are related to that type of land that we buy. If we are buying a dairy farm, it's important that you must also talk to the dairy equipment that is there on that farm, not just to the land that you are buying. The department, in terms of the this legislation, this Land and Assistance Act of 1993, it was amended last year, and during the time of President Montlande, he approved this amendment to include these movable assets in the acquisition of land, precisely to ensure sustainable land reform. In terms of that amendment, we have to establish a trading entity which is going to ensure that there is the acquisition, management, disposal and leasing of that property that we will be buying. And the National Treasury is assisting us and guiding us on the establishment of that trading entity. The implementation of PLAS has not been without problems. We have picked up some audit qualifications, particularly around asset and lease management in the implementation of PLAS, but we are addressing those challenges. We have also learned from the implementation of the land reform that there is no one-size-fits-all for the on the beneficiaries of land reform. They have got different needs and are at different levels of development. So just to have a common product is not assisting in achieving the effectiveness of the implementation of land reform. Hence, the proposal of categorization of land reform beneficiaries. There are those people who are landless households who have no space even for gardening. And it is said that about 2 million of our population has got these types of households, rural households. They need land for subsistence agriculture, for gardening, and we are saying that we need a special product for that type of people. They may not be all looking for commercial farms, but they may be looking for land just for survival. Perhaps we need to meet that kind of need. And then there's a category of commercial ready subsistence producers, and this has manifested itself in these congested at homeland areas. We've got people who may have 100 cattle, 200 cattle, 500 sheep, and those people clearly are ready for commercial farming, but they are constrained by the environment in which they find themselves, which is these at homeland areas. So if you have a product that specifically speaks to these people that are finding themselves in these congested areas, to assist them. And then the other one is expanding commercial smallholders. In other words, those who are already operating at a commercial level, that you can assist them so that they can operate even more effectively as the smallholders. And then there is the well-established black commercial farmers. So the different products of land reform can be designed such that they speak to the different needs and the different categories so that you are effective in assisting these farmers. Some of them may be ready to go to the bank to make loans, but some of them may not be ready. So your product should speak to those different categories. That is what we are saying could actually assist us in sharpening our delivery of land reform. And then the other one program is the tenure reform. It talks mainly to evictions, and we do have the legislations of ESTA and LGA assisting those people who are living on farms to improve their conditions in that environment. We have established a land rights management facility to provide legal assistance to these people who are victims of evictions on farms. And we have established a land tenure mediation service panel to deal effectively with evictions and deal with some of the conflicts that are there on farms. We also have the Communal Land Rights Act, which seeks to secure ownership of land in the traditional communities, thereby unlocking development potential in rural areas. We still have a pending court case on this, Clara, but we have established the regulations of this, and we have debated and engaged most of the stakeholders in the discussion of these Clara regulations. Once these have been finalized, we will be able to implement Clara. And then the restitution program, we have settled 95% of the 79,696 land claims that were lodged, enabling restoration of at least 2.3 million hectares to the people who were victims of land dispossession, benefiting 302,000 households through this program. This has not been without challenges. One of the challenges is budgetary constraints. We need about 15 billion to settle the outstanding 4,200 land claims. And we have got escalating land prices. This is a common problem to all land reform programs. And this does not help. Some people have been saying that the recession may lead to the drop in land prices, especially for housing. But it doesn't look like it has got an effect on reducing the land prices on farms, particularly because the land is bought from government. So once the farmers know that this land is from government, they tend to demand more. And this is supported by international experience. In Brazil, they had the same curve. In Kenya, they had the same curve. And so is the case in some of the countries that implement these land reform programs. The other one is the jurisdiction and boundary conflicts among communities. This tends to drag this restitution program where these disputes take a long time to settle. The other one is the disputes especially around land prices and the validity of the claim. We've got about 200 cases which are before the Land Claims Court precisely because of these disputes amongst the landowners and sometimes amongst the land beneficiaries. One of the challenges has been the capacity within the Department of Land Affairs, and we didn't have the required competences in the department, and as a result, it takes quite some time to achieve the desired result. It should be noted that the challenges have also contributed to the delays in the settlement of these claims. We also have the land and planning information component of the department, which deals with deed registration, surveys and mapping, cadastral surveys, special planning and information. The services that they provide include national mapping, aerial photography, and other imagery, integrated spatial reference frameworks, and other geospatial information in support of national infrastructure and sustainable development. Most of the municipalities, when they do their IDPs, they got what they call the spatial development framework. They use the services of our department for those purposes. When you use your GPS in your car, that map is actually serviced and supported by our surveys and mapping unit here in Mowbray here in Cape Town, which has got servicing units all over the country. And then the issue of the support that these components provide to land reform is very important, such as surveys and mapping, the deed registration of all properties. In South Africa, when you hear of land transactions and land sales, where you need a deed of sale for, a title deed for each property, it is the deed registration component that has to process all of those deeds, title deeds. And that component is here in the Department of Land Affairs. We are also contributing to deepening the commitments and the implementation of the African Development Agenda. We are working with other countries on the mapping of Africa. Other countries are not as advanced as this country, and we have interacted with quite a number of the African countries in the mapping of Africa. We are also participating in the implementation of some of the NEPAD programs which relate to land reform. SADC is having a land reform facility component, and we are interacting with SADC around that. This component of LPI is also having to implement spatial planning, and the Land Use Management Bill is before Parliament, and the President in the SONA said that we need to speed the finalization of this LAM. It is under this component that LAM is administered. Then in corporate services, we've got about 4,200 employees in this department, and we have reduced our vacancy rate from 27% to 16.5 to date. I would like to go to the norm, which is 10%. So we're still not satisfied with that 16.5% vacancy rate. We have developed, we have assessed our capacity level, and we know where we need improved competencies. We don't have the right number of valuers. We don't have the right number of surveyors. We don't have the right number of planners, town planners. We say that we need more skills in this area. We've also identified that we need a lot of development economists, social workers, people who can work with people for social facilitation, particularly with the added responsibility of rural development. We need more of those skills. We have developed the HRM plan to deal with the issue of skills in the department. We provide support services such as the legal services, human resource development, IT services, financial management. That is what is covered under our corporate services. We are still dealing with the qualified audit, particularly around asset and lease management. This is the work in progress. We are dealing with the National Treasury and the Office of the Auditor General around this. I'm not going to spend time on statutory bodies. Ngwanyama Trust Board is one of our, those statutory bodies that reports to us with the support of about two million rand. In their budget. Plato is a technical and professional surveyors body which regulates how they function. So is SACPLAN for the Council of Planners, Committee on Special Information and Planning, the Deeds Registration Board, and the Sectional Titles Regulation Board. Those are the statutory bodies who are functioning under the legislation that is under this department. On policy and legislation priorities, we do have a draft policy on the ownership of land by foreigners, the review of the willing buyer, willing seller. We have got a discussion document around that where we would like to review this willing buyer, willing seller. And then the comprehensive rural development program, we still have to develop policy, a white paper on this. I think it's very urgent that we do that for the implementation of the comprehensive rural development program. On legislation, we do have these pieces of legislation, Black Authorities Act repeal. This is affecting particularly the implementation of rural development, given that these pieces of legislation are old and outdated. The registration amendment bill needed some amendments to make some of the transactions even more efficient and effective in this this registration process. The surveying profession bill looks at improving the functioning of the profession. And the land use management bill and the CLARA regulations have spoken to those. A lot of people want to suggest that the Expropriation Act is under this department, but the reality is that it is under Public Works, not under this committee here. The challenges are budgetary constraints for all the three programs that we implement, including this new baby, the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. We are dealing with the capacity issues for the department. We are dealing with the complex outstanding rural claims, and we understand the urgency, the vastness and the complexity of the rural needs, and this is what we have to take into account when we deal with the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. Just the concept of the Rural Development Program, we are saying that to drive this program, we need agrarian transformation as our strategy to drive the rural development program. And in terms of rural development, we are talking about economic infrastructure. This will talk to the issues of warehouses, production and agro-processing centers, roads in the rural areas, the road infrastructure, as well as the social infrastructure. This will include things like your community centers, community halls, museums, libraries, leadership has talked about making rural life very attractive to all of the people that live in the rural areas. That we must not leave rural people wandering, going to the cities in order to look for a better life in the cities when they leave the rural areas. We must improve the life where the people are. And then the issues of land reform are these programs that I spoke to. We have got to review our land reform products, as I indicated, your LRADs, your settlement planning and land acquisition grants, your PLAS and your area-based planning, which assist us in an effective implementation of rural development. We need to look at all of those programs and see how we can improve on this program to speed up land reform. We do have the new vision with the agrarian transformation to look at what is it that we can do to improve the rural life. And to do that, we will need to look at the issues of the sustainable use and management of natural resources, the integrated production systems to increase production in these rural areas, the livestock farming so that people can find wealth in the livestock that is there in the rural areas and improve the management of their livestock, rural livelihoods. There are so many activities in the rural areas which can improve the life of our people in the rural areas. And the crop farming and including agro-processing, we are saying that all of those things are the key elements of this agrarian transformation change. The appropriate technologies, our people have got wealth of knowledge and experience about how best to deal with some of the things that they have got to do to be successful. And the issue of food security. I'm not going to speak to all of this. One of these considerations we have to make is the establishment of a rural development agency that can actually see to the implementation of the comprehensive rural development program. We are at the moment talking about piloting this concept of comprehensive rural development in Guyana. And we have obtained socio-economic profile of Guyana focusing on three areas, the Gongongo, Muyeshe, and the Tingamanzi area out of the 30 wards of Kiani. So we're focusing there and we're adopting the war room on poverty approach to deal with this. We've done the before status of Kiani. We would like, after 2 years of staying in Kiani, what will be the experience after? In other words, what will be the impact of the intervention in Kiani? In the short term, we would like to look at what will this pilot teach us? What will we learn from the implementation of this pilot in Kiani? We are also looking at Rempas Mark in the Northern Cape, where we are going to do this piloting. And we have identified the other provinces such as KZN, Free State, Eastern Cape, and Northwest as some of the areas where we will have pilots. In fact, when I speak to the budget, which is slide number 29, we've got 6 billion rand in our budget, and that 6 billion rand is the amount that is available in this current financial year. We still have to deal with the MTF in October, as we are engaging with National Treasury, so we'll be able to know how much is available for as the reviewed allocation to the program. But what we are saying is that in terms of this pilot, out of this 6 billion, we are talking about loaning, if you like, some 500 million from the existing budget so that we can be able to run with this pilot without delay immediately. And we are talking to National Treasury about this. They have committed that they will assist us in terms of this. But in the slide 31 is just talking to the need of an additional resource of 71 billion rand to be able to implement just the land reform program. We are not adding the issue of the comprehensive rural development program to that. We are not including it in that 71 billion. This is just to implement the land reform program up to 2014. There has been an announcement that was made, and our chairperson has asked, well, what happened to that 1.8 billion that was announced in February for rural development? I think this slide here is just explaining that actually that money, what relates to land affairs, is only 700 million by the year 2011. It would be complementing what redistribution and what restitution have been allocated with. It would come only in 2011. Effectively, that money is for the project of agriculture. That is what slide 32 is trying to explain. That it is for the ILIMA, LITRIMA, and all the support programs that agriculture presented here, AgriB and all of that, MAFISA and all of that. That amount is 197 million for this current financial year, and it is 305 for the forthcoming year, and it will be 577 for the coming year. The total of 1.8 billion over a 3-year period. It was not like available immediately now. It was phased over a 3-year period. So I just wanted to explain that so that people do not say that, what are you doing with that 1.8 billion? In conclusion, Chair, we are saying that our mandate is guided by the strategic direction from the manifesto of the ruling party, the priorities arrived at by government in the MTSF, and our vision is to see vibrant and sustainable rural communities through the implementation of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program as a vehicle, and that we are implementing this pilot. We need the cooperation and support from the various state departments, municipalities, and other relevant stakeholders, including NGOs, development finance institutions, and other research institutions, including universities. We will use the available budget to implement the current program, and even to start on this pilot. That's all I can cover, Chair, in the time given.
very much, TG. This time is, we have an hour. In fact, we do not have an hour, we have 45 minutes, because we are going to break for lunch at 10 to 1. Can we entertain questions? Ms. Moss? I will take the names of Ms. Moss. Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much, Professor. My name is Inga Moss. I'm from the ANC. I want to raise the concern about farm evictions. Chairperson, I think this issue of farm evictions is long overdue. I don't know if there is a loophole in the Act or in the ESTA. And if there is a loophole, then I think we must correct it. And also on the information in the presentation, I think we are not aware that there is a center dealing with farm evictions, where people are causing them, where people can ask for assistance or for advice or so forth. And if we can get that address or contact number so that we can liaise, especially the PCOs, because they say that the farm workers coming to because they don't know where to go into. And I think as a department, we must work together as stakeholders on the matter, as the CC and so forth, because they say, oh, the baby's caught, they go to the court, and there's nobody who is assisting them, the court will present them there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moss. Mr. Van Bosma.
Thank you, sir. So I think just to comment, first of all, I think the rural development strategy is most important to all of us. I think we all agree that we have to do something in the rural areas to uplift the living standards and quality of people. And I think looking at the strategy framework, it goes much further than land reform. And I think that is the point that I would like to make. If you look at the medium-term strategy framework of what is said here, the revitalization of rural towns, ensuring quality of job opportunities, and so on. So the point is that I want to make, and I think maybe my question would then be, this stretches an intergovernmental position where a lot of governments will have to work together to achieve this goal. Otherwise, it's not going to do anything to change anything on the ground. And my question would be, are the other departments that are also involved in this position, are they willing and also contributing to it? Maybe just a comment also on the ESTA. A review of the ESTA Security of Kenya Act, and it also says here that the legal assistance to evictees, and my understanding was that we already have had lots of discussions on this issue, and actually it was also cleared in the previous parliament on the numbers of evictees that is still being evicted. And I would like to just maybe for the interest of this new committee have those figures again, maybe or current figures, again released, because as far as my knowledge is concerned, there are very, very little evictees these days available. Secondly, that we have already cleared out a strategy to look after the position of rural dwellers. But in other words, they were in the previous government, there was a strategy actually already discussed and approved, but it has not been implemented. So my question is, why do we? Is the strategy still in place for rural dwellers to have the alternative, three alternatives that was put into place previously for having houses in towns if they wish so, or having small scale farmers, or being allocated large farms? To get away from the negative position of this ESTA Act, because ESTA is definitely, as far as my party is concerned, not the way to solve this problem.
And I think we would like to insist again to see that we look at the alternatives so that we don't get people evicted from farms, if there are any. But I think you understand what I say. Conjunction with that, though, my second question would then be on the... Have I got two already?
Okay.
I'll have this in my portfolio. Thank you.
Honourable Professor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is with regard to the policy on use it or lose it, and also on the question of post-settlement support. I just want maybe the department to come very clear on that one, because there are so many things that are happening as we speak, that people have been given land and now they don't have support from the government that they must use that land. So I just want to know as to whether if they want to review this policy, are they also going to look at how did they support those people with the resources to make sure that they're using those lands? So that's my first question. And my second question is with regard to the pilot project in Giani. I received several calls from people there in Giani. They don't understand exactly what is going to happen. They just said that they've been called to meetings and they were told that there's going to be a project that's going to be there, but they don't know exactly what is that project all about, how much money is being put for that project to run. So I just want maybe clarity from the department exactly what's going to happen in that project so that those people can understand, and also for us to understand as a committee. And the last one is with regard to the
Honourable Abraham, you asked two questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Abraham.
Thank you, Chair. I'll have to find innovative methods of asking many questions in one. With regard to high land prices, I would just like to refer to the Lanbovier flood. The cover date is the 12th of June this week. And in instances where the department purchases land vis-a-vis where private people buy land and sell land or whatever, there is a massive gap in prices. For example, Chair, in the Freiburg area, in the district of Bray, the farm Check Dam 289 was bought by the Department of Land Affairs 7,392 hectares for a whopping 38 million rand. 38 million rand. And the carrying capacity in that area, as far as I know, of livestock units, is about 7 to 8 hectares per livestock unit, if not more. Then, Chair, another strange one here, in the district of Chevron, also in the Freiburg registration district, 6,199 hectares, another whopping 38 million rand. In fact, the same figure. The price was the same figure. Here, then in my district where I am, a farm of 1,064 hectares, which the previous owner had bought about 3 years prior to him selling it to the department, for 1.9 million, was bought by the department for a whopping 7 million rand. Now, Chair, somewhere along the line, something is grossly wrong. And I would like to know from the department that is the department a captive purchaser? Is the department placed against a wall that it has no other option but to buy? And that the seller has all the aces in his or her favor? I think these are not my market-related figures. So, Chair, I can give you just in this particular report of registrations at the deeds office, I can give you a half a dozen different examples of how the prices virtually in the same districts, same areas, vary between what we pay and between what the private sales take place between people themselves. And I may add, Chair, that at some stage or the other, there was an article in the Farmers Weekly which I sent to the department, in which it was alleged that at an auction sale in the Eastern Cape, The department went along and outbid everyone else and paid the highest prices, so I understand, for the land that was purchased. Now, in this way, sir, we need to look after the resources of the people of South Africa, the poor people, and see that every rand is spent wisely and that we get the maximum benefit out of that every rand. Finally, sir, my second question. Chair, this business of the purchase of going concerns. There were going concerns purchased by the department, which included chickens and stuff. Let me tell you, Chairperson, by the time those going concerns are transferred to people or some other beneficiaries are placed on that land, those going concerns are no longer going, sir. They are standing concerns. And I would like to know from the department, and I would like to ask the department, sir, that they give us, to the committee, information on every going concern that was purchased, where it is located, what was purchased in terms of the so-called going concern, and what form of monitoring is taking place on the going concerns to determine whether what you had bought is still there. Chair, may I also just ask that
you will make me
inconvenient. No, it's part of this, Chair. Part of this. We need to know when you tell us where these going concerns are. Not the name of the farm and the province. We need to know the district in which they are situated. Please, because otherwise we don't know how to go there to go and do our own monitoring. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stein.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I'm an expert from the Democratic Alliance. If I might comment on the last speaker, I think the best way of dealing with inconsistency with prices is when they get farmers into the Department of Land Affairs that's buying, because they will definitely help with this negotiation of prices. And I think that just as a thing that I've picked up in the past in our areas, people said that the people buying these farms on the behalf of the department don't have an idea of what it is. So maybe it's just a comment. And then just on the lighter note, I just want to ask the DG, when they do the GPS thing, if they can make sure that we know where all the speeding cameras is for us in the future. Chairperson, my concern, and I think I just raised it in our committee last week, is that I'm very worried about this rural development plan that we need to put in place while we have a lot of things on the ground already in IDPs. I know in my district municipality where I come from, we were working for 5-6 years already now on an integrated sustainable rural development program as a district municipality. And I was just wondering, before we start pilot projects again, are we going to get these reports from district municipalities and local municipalities? And is there any place, or are there any place where some of these projects have been implemented with success, so that we can learn from what happened on the ground already before we, you know, go along with some pilot projects? It may also be that the pilot project has got and I think I want to add to what Mr. Swati was saying, that it might be that we don't understand as a committee, you know, especially what these pilot projects all include, if it's more on infrastructure and things like that, and maybe, you know, the project on the ground level was not so much broad-based. So if we can just understand those two concepts. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Mr. Kehler from the UDF. I just want to speak on the land claims, especially in my area. They are outstanding land claims, and they've been there for years, and I'm sure, Chairperson, you know about it. and because of the conflict, that has not been resolved. But while there is this conflict, some of the structures have deteriorated, and on one side there is a land invasion. Now, how does the department plan to resolve that? Because on one side, some of this land is prime land that can be used to develop these small towns. And this has been going on for years and years and years. For instance, if you talk of the 210 stadium, it's not built in Umtata because of the land conflict. But there's got to be some system, some way to resolve this here, because it's costing the taxpayers quite a lot of money. That is my first one. The second one, just on the willing buyer, willing seller, we must be fair to each other. It just does not work at all. And it does not only affect this department, it also affects public works. It seems somewhere, some people are trying to, to derail the government's programs. Because you find even in housing that the prices that are being charged for our people, you compare that in the apartheid era, in the 60s where ordinary people could buy a house in town, but nowadays they cannot do that because of that. So my suggestion is that these departments must get together and try to resolve this here, because it's affecting the people. Thank you.
Honorable Pastor. Chair, thank you very much. I have two questions about the land reform program. My first question would be whether a land audit has been done to determine exactly what land is available in this process. And secondly, if one looks at the projections of the department in terms of how many hectares they plan to buy in the next couple of years, and you look at the actual target of 24 million hectares that must be transferred by 2014, those sums don't tally. So that to me either says that the department must get much more money to transfer the land, or secondly, that may be totally unrealistic. Maybe the department can just act as that, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. On the issue of the farm evictions, we do have the program we call Land Reform Management Facility. And if you go to our provincial land reform offices or our district land reform offices, they should be able to link any person who would like assistance with the land reform management facility support system, the lawyers that represent those evictees in court. So the address there is contact our provincial land reform offices or district land reform offices. And then on the question of the others were comments, but the question was whether the other departments are going to participate in the implementation of the comprehensive rural development program. The answer is yes. In my last slide, I indicated that we've got other departments. Like, for example, when we go to Guyana, we went with the Department of Agriculture, Forestries and Fisheries. And we've got other departments like Water Affairs. So all other departments just have to, because a number of the needs of rural development do not only cover the competences and mandate of this department. They involve, for example, transport, housing, the human settlement, etc. And then the question is whether there is a strategy in place to deal with how to assist the people living on farms. Yeah, we have said that we do have a program to acquire land for the people who are living on farms, so that we stop these evictions. But when we talk about tenure reform, we do spend money to acquire land for those purposes. The strategy of establishing agri-villages will be part of our response in the implementation of the rural development program. We talked about the agri-villages and the agricultural corridors that could assist those people, so that we are not just talking about the land acquisition, but also the services that are required to support. Because most of the farmers are complaining that they provide water, they provide electricity at their own cost to these farm dwellers. And we're saying the response to our system should be a comprehensive response which speaks to all of their needs, such as water, electricity, etc. So that program is still there. On the question of use it or lose it, it is true that that policy is in our program, it's on our website, but the reality is that program was there to encourage people to use land once they get land from this program of land reform. It was developed in the environment where 49% of the people that get land are not using the land. But it is also true that in that policy, one of the most important things that are outlined in the policy is the provision of support. And I think I'm not going to repeat what the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has said about the need of that provision of that post-settlement support to the people who are land reform beneficiaries. The issue of Kiani, that people do not know what is happening. I would be surprised if all of the villagers would know the details of the program, which is what the Honorable Sweater is talking about. In 2 weeks, you cannot expect a population of 3,000 households to be able to know the detail of the very thing that we ourselves have no details of. We don't have a budget of each of the programs that they have identified. We had a participatory program which said all of those households must actually state what is their priority. And then all of that, those priorities and needs will be put in a participatory manner to do the analysis of which programs are prioritized, which projects are prioritized, and who is going to be funding what component of which program. Some may be roads, so that funding allocation cannot come from this department. It will come from another department. To answer the question about learning from the existing program, it is true that will be put in the basket. That's why the chairperson of this planning committee in Biani is the municipal manager of the municipality there. He knows the IRCP, the IDP plan in that area, what they have planned for, what is working, what is not working. So it will be a product of this consultation, and we are busy, and as I'm speaking now, they are doing the measurement of what is necessary in terms of fields, the crops, and whatever. So I'm not surprised that out of the 3,000 households there may not have the plan, because that plan, we are pulling it together as we plan together. So we will know at the end of the process what is to be done there. At the moment, we are all talking and prioritizing. And then the issue of high land prices. I want to agree with the Honorable Abram that some of these prices, myself, when I did an analysis in the Eastern Cape, in the Free State, in KwaZulu-Natal, I found that most of these land transactions through the department are actually pushing the land prices even higher. That's why I said in my introduction, once the people know that it is the government buying, then they push the prices up, and we accept the advice that perhaps when you get people such as the farmers who know what are the land prices and how much they buy for, themselves in that area. It may assist to get those experts. I think one of the challenges is that some of the officials, like you correctly have said, may not have a clue about what is happening on those, because they themselves are not farmers. So we are taking this into account, and we have, in the department, we have said we need to review all of this. It cannot continue like this. And the resources that we've got cannot be spent on supporting this artificial increase in land prices. We cannot afford it. So we accept that observation and we'll do something about it. And then the going concern, we will provide the information of where we bought this farm where. And then the issue of rural development and learning from successful projects, we are accepting that advice. In fact, as I said in responding to the Kiani question, we are trying to get what works and what does not work from those people who are there. And we are not just talking about municipalities, we are talking about the rural communities themselves. They know what works in their environment. So we want to draw from their experience in that area. On the issue of conflict around land claims, and that sometimes they stand on the way of development. You see, one of the challenges is that this program is based on a legislation, and many people have got these rights, which we must respect. If they want, they take you to court because they want to exercise their rights. You don't have much options there. You just have to go through the land claims court processes. The example is this Mtata case, which is sitting in court. The claimant took the matter to court. We had interventions where we spoke to the municipality, to the district municipality, and the claimants themselves. We advised them on some options, and one of the positive outcomes was that, for example, the stadium in Omtata, they got a letter which said that the claimants are not opposed to that development. So the construction of the stadium is continuing because of negotiations. In other words, we didn't have to take and get a court order for that. Out of a negotiated process, then the judge accepted the outcome of that negotiation, and the stadium, construction of the stadium continues, like in many other areas. But in some areas, some of the participants become very arrogant, actually, and become very difficult. And then we've got to follow the law, the processes of the law in such cases. The issue of the audit, as I indicated, we have done the state land audit, but we have not done the audit of private land, which is available for land reform purposes. We still have to do that, and it will be an interesting exercise. We think it's a very detailed exercise, which would require that we must be on each of the properties in South Africa, which are in private hands, to see who is, which land is available for land reform, which one can we get, at what cost. That exercise will be an interesting one, but it's a mammoth task. We have not done that one. I don't know from my colleagues, especially Restitution Commissioner and Mr. Shaban, whether I've left out anything in my response. Okay, please say no.
Did you let me hear from you? Yeah, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we still have time, but there are no questions. I'm not going to force members to ask questions. I will... okay, honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mrs. Ohateli, the grandchild of the African National Congress. Yes. The question that I have, I heard the issue of the
relationship with other departments. But when it comes to the issue of the farm migrations and the farm dwellers, I would like maybe to submit to say if the department can be able to work closely with the department of the police so that they can ensure a stronger relationship so that also police can understand what the other acts say in terms of those relations, because you find out then that you find those challenges when you try to involve police to come and assist. They cannot be able to assist because even themselves they don't understand the impact of the act. So if you can be able to work closely with those departments, you can be able to assist a lot. Lastly, it reminds also my serious concern that also the president has managed to also outline in his interview yesterday in terms of the issues of the skills development. I heard you mentioning issues of a shortage of these important skills. But the president has also mentioned clearly to say it's very much important that you must also look and target those other matriculants. That also you cannot just throw them because they shouldn't be able to pass them and say. But how do we ensure that you develop their skills? Because even if they cannot be able to fulfill pass their metric in terms of writing, but in terms of the skills development, we can be able to achieve more with our South African strategy. But also ensuring that you try to enforce or work closely with the Department of Education to ensure that some of the specific skills that you're talking about, there must be a certain strategy in ensuring that is enhanced within the department. Because as I try to follow up your human resource management plan here, there's no way where you say specifically in terms of working closely with that department in ensuring the skills development. But also it doesn't mention your recruitment strategy doesn't also speak specifically in terms of uplifting the rural communities there in terms of that skills development. Thanks.
Did you?
Yeah, thank you very much. I forgot to indicate to the honorable member that we even have the toll-free number for the weekend, and it's in the strat plan on page 23, that number, other than the land reform, land rights management facility, which can be linked up in our district and provincial land reform offices. Yeah, on this question of police, we are trying very hard to interact with the police. In fact, we even have a forum where we are working with the private sector to ensure that this issue of dealing with crime on farms is addressed, and there is cooperation with all of the relevant stakeholders. This also includes the issue of dealing effectively with eviction. But I must say that we've got a challenge of cooperation in some of the offices. In some of the provinces, there is the racial slant to who responds quickly to those cases. For example, in the KwaZulu-Natal area of Newcastle and Jandi, where we had a number of evictions, there have been complaints that if they go to those police centers, if they report a case to some of the officials there, and the officials are closer to the person who was evicting, then that case goes nowhere.
and the same stories have been given in Mpumalanga. So I'm saying it's a matter that we have discussed with the Department of Police, which needs special attention. On the skills development, I thought it was covered in our plan, but it is true that we are interacting with most of the universities. For example, we do have interaction with the university in the Western Cape, in the UCT, and in KwaZulu-Natal, and in Venda, around the training of surveyors. There's a very serious shortage of surveyors. So we do have, we interact with some of the universities. Some of them were about to close some of these faculties because they say they are not getting enough students. The issue of transformation of these faculties in some of the universities is a serious issue. And we thought that we need to deal with that matter very decisively about the transformation of our institutions, particularly some of the faculties in these institutions. The matriculants, I think we have set ourselves a very good target of about 4,000 matriculants that will graduate, we call them graduate program. Where in fact we have even contracted, so far we have appointed this 400, Anton. Yeah, 400 that we want to employ, graduates that are unemployed. We put them in four-year contracts so that after that 4 years, we make sure that they have acquired the skills in the areas where they are shortages. So that program is working very well. As Anton says, we've already employed people under such contracts, 128 out of the 420 that we would like to employ. The Department of Education, I think we'll be working with the Department of Education on a number of areas. One of them that we have discussed is these seekers, which now fall under the higher education, especially that relates to this area of agriculture and the relevant skills development in that area. We'll be working with them. I don't know whether Anton has got anything to add on that. I think I've covered the question.
Before you leave the matter, the Honorable Bosman has raised the issue about the negative approach that the DA took at EFSA and the other facility that was agreed on that is not implemented. He didn't comment on that. I also have a question from my co-chair. Perhaps it may even relate to some of the questions from the chair.
My question, Chair, is very brief. Thinking about education department, one of the areas that I work in is called GOFA, which is part of campus of Valley area in part of Takata. That's a very big farming community. You are going to talk here about Anji and Donhill and Patensi and those places. But there is no one high school there that has got a subject in its curriculum called agriculture. There is not even a college on agriculture there. For me, it's quite an anomaly. As a result, what you do find there are your seasonal farm workers, basically getting out of school at an early time. And you have mentioned the fact that you are having such a relationship with the education department. I would hold that to be one of those issues that you seriously need to engage in with the education department, if you have any comment on that as well.
Yeah, I'll ask him to respond to the question that was asked by the Honorable Laurie Bosman. on this one of education, I must say that in our new strategy of comprehensive rural development, we have said one of the priorities which we must work on with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is this issue of encouraging agriculture in schools. And we said our contribution could be to establish these gardens. When I went to school, at 3 o'clock in the school, in fact from between 12 and 3 o'clock, we would be going to agricultural lessons in the garden. But we have realized that most of our schools have no gardens now for agriculture, and agriculture has no teacher. So we are saying that this is one of the engagements that we would like the three departments to deal with: agriculture, rural development and education, how to promote and encourage agriculture in schools. Perhaps the minister has spoke and passionately about this, perhaps he can speak to that. Mutu?
Honorable Chair, Honorable Bosman was answered. He suggests by the answer from the Director General with regard to the program that we have developed recently to acquire land for people living on commercial farmland. But also as you expand your CRPP, you begin to deal with a larger number of people living on commercial farmland.
DTG, I may have missed that, but the point, I think, which keeps on coming from honorable members, is the fact that evictions continue. In order to deal with the issue of evictions, we have to make sure that both EFSA and the program that you're talking about are seen to be working. And we cannot be running around in the countryside checking and responding to the toll-free number about the evictions. We have to make sure we are proactive and make sure that we seek the cooperation of the farmers with the department on the stopping of evictions. And that is perhaps the underlying factor in what the Honorable Bosman was talking about. And I welcome that honorable member. We have come to an end of questions and comments. And I will give this time to my co-chair and ministers and deputy ministers if they want to round up so that we can work out our way forward. We are working towards the 17th of June for the debate on the two votes.
Thanks, Chair. There's two quick ones that we'll have to just dispense of. The first one is that on Thursday we shall be expected to adopt a report for tabling in the HC before the debate. So we shall then have to be called upon maybe just for 15, 30 minutes for such an adoption. That's the first one. We will be informed in due course on the time. The second one, one of our members has had a bereavement, or rather has a bereavement, Bibusa Muswani, one of the members in the family, has passed away. I'm not sure about the policy here, as and when one of our members, I'm referring here to Ms. Bibusa Muswani, who is a member of the Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. But what I thought we might wish to do, without really making it an issue for a meeting to be discussed, we simply get a card and also make whatever contribution we want to make. I'm sure the details will get it from the committee section. And then if anybody
who will have time, perhaps shall represent to the committee with that type of a contribution. Which area is she from again? Limpopo, am I correct? Limpopo. So, that's now Limpopo. I think that one we shall have to get more details perhaps tomorrow when we come together. And then we know exactly what next we shall be expected to do. That should be about it from my side. And again, we are going to be meeting tomorrow at 10 at the same venue with another committee. I'm talking here specifically as part of fishing, forestry and fisheries, with a committee that shall be dealing with
of course, this last 10 minutes for the ministers and deputy ministers.
Thanks, Chair. Chairman, just 2 points of emphasis from what the department has already stated. I just wanted to comment on two areas. One is from the comprehensive rural development side. Just to assure the honorable member from the DA that we definitely don't want to reinvent the wheel. So there are a number of previous projects, even though there was not a focused rural development department. There are a number of previous projects, including pilots, which were done under various auspices within government, which we definitely are looking at so that we can learn quicker from some of those previous initiatives. Colleagues will remember that under various programs, some of them under the previous DPLG, the various rural nodal points were identified, and a lot of work was done in those areas. And it's not our intention to ignore the result of that work, so that you know we can fast track rather than repeat some of the work which has already been done. The second feature I just wanted to comment to say that I'm sure the honourable members here appreciate the enormity of the challenge faced by this department, especially in terms of the land redistribution. As it's been presented here by the DG, it's quite clear that if we carry on in the normal manner which we have been going, both from the restitution side, of course the restitution has a particular regulation and law which guides it and which will bring it to some conclusion. But in as far as the redress of land hunger from the redistribution reform of land tenure, it's quite clear that even the target of 2014, as it's in the presentation here, as things stand, we are going to fall far short for various reasons. One, we are all aware that with the current economic crisis, the revenue available to government is going to be even less. I think that is quite clear. But secondly, that even if things were normal as in terms of the economic growth which we have been experiencing, as members have, you know, as presented by the DG and discussed here, the problem which we are facing is that the prices keep going up. So even the estimate which is presented here of the 71 billion required by 2014, that's in terms of the prices currently. So if you look at it, if you project it to that period and with this price increases which are abnormal, you can imagine already that by that period, obviously, even the figure would be much higher to acquire that balance
of over 20 million hectares. So it does call for very creative intervention, and it's something which we are engaging, and I'm sure we'll welcome from honorable members here some suggestions in terms of, because these who are in it all together, we may be the people who are given the task by the president. But at the end, it's in the interest of all of us. We don't want to, 5 years down the line, to find ourselves where across the Limpopo, our colleagues there found themselves about almost 10 years ago, which is going to catch up with us. I mean, if there is no specific solution.
Thank you, Chief. Just one small onion, I think. And that is on the willing buyer, willing seller. Chair, we have heard the landless people. In 2005, there was a land summit, and they say the willing buyer, willing seller model of land redistribution doesn't work. We also heard the delegates of the ruling party in Polokwane saying the same thing. But we need to have, I mean, to hear now the landlords, what are they saying? We aim at a pragmatic resolution to this challenge. There is a glimpse of hope, I think, because the other day I met with farmers in Matatia, and they said to me, well, you are buying from individual farmers. Talk to us as a collective, as a union of farmers. Because we know what are the prices. Talk to this private exchange, which is cheaper. So I think that to me is a window of opportunity. I hope that every other farmer or farming organization would adopt that positive attitude. We'll pursue that and see how it works. The last one is just for information to say that the bidder, the best bidder in that in the Eastern Cape was in this department. It was Owatambo District Municipality. This department was outbid by the District Municipality. Thank you, sir.
I am happy to know, Honourable Minister, that the President is putting together a planning commission so that all of us from the district municipalities and the local government, the ministry, could read from the same hymn book regarding this matter. Because if the district municipality is going to an auction and is determined to buy the farm irrespective of the price, and even outbidding the department that is charged with the responsibility of buying farms. Remember that the municipality has no responsibility of buying farms. So I think we will be on the same page from now on, so that we stop this kind of practice. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to an end of our meeting, and I would request the honourable members from the ANC side to remain on their seats when everybody is leaving, because I've got a message for them. Thank you very much.
Okay. He was the last one to speak before the show.
Thank you, sir.